prayer. Much of what you'll hear here in this program is about applying the great wisdom of being an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, bringing love, because the presence of love in the face of hatred nullifies and dissipates hatred. So the spiritual solution to hatred is just to confront it with love, and it can't survive. Where there is injury, pardon. Injury can't survive in the face of pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. You don't have to announce to a dark room, "Watch out, I'm going to light a candle. You better get out of here, darkness." Darkness simply can't survive in the face of a lit candle of light. Bringing light to darkness is a way of nullifying virtually any problem. Where there is sadness, joy. And each of these are chapters in a book, and each of them I'll be talking about here later on. St. Francis, as you'll hear, was a very, very important teacher in my life. I just returned from Assisi last week, and I'll share with you about that and how powerful an experience that was for me. And I was giving a talk in New Orleans just a few weeks ago, and talking a bit about St. Francis and the consciousness that he represented in his lifetime in the 13th century. He was the first confirmed stigmatic. The last 2 years of his life, his hands and his feet and his side had to be bound so that he didn't bleed to death with the wounds of Christ. And when St. Francis died, 2 years later, he was named a saint by the Catholic Church. They said that at his funeral that all of the birds in the forest came to a halt and lined up. He gave sermons to the birds, and all of the animals who were his friends wept. He was, in his own lifetime, recognized for the saintliness that his life represented. Here's what he said. He said, "The mind does nothing but talk and ask questions and search for meanings. The heart does not talk, does not ask questions, does not search for meanings. It silently, silently, it moves towards God and surrenders itself to Him. The mind is Satan's lawyer." I like that. "The heart is God's servant." And I think that when I was writing, I decided that I wouldn't write with a machine, because somehow the machine interfered with this, where you pointed to yourself when you pointed at your heart. I would get up every morning about 3:30, just automatically I would just wake up. And when I get into a writing frenzy, which means once I start a book, I know that I'm going to write every day until it's finished. I never give myself permission to take a day of not writing, because it's like a connection. And I would go over to my office in the middle of the night, about 4 miles from my home. And I would sit down at the dining room table. I had all these papers all spread out, and I have sort of a funny little routine that I do. If I start writing something and I wrinkle up the paper, you know, and throw it, I don't move that until the book is done. And I don't let anybody come into my office and clean anything up or move anything. Whatever is there, it just sits. It's like an energy. Even that which isn't working in the moment becomes something that you rely upon and you notice and you observe. And it's like creating a whole energy field of completion. And when I would sit down, I would put my left hand on the table and take a pad of paper and a ballpoint pen, and then I would allow the words to come through my heart, right through my heart and onto the page, like I was making this connection between the page, my heart, and what was going to be put on it. So that I would allow my heart, which is who I am, it's just my connection to my source, it's the life beat, if you will, to write. And it's really a surrendering process, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. But this whole idea of just letting go, just turning it over, trusting. The most marvelous, the most wonderful, the most blissful moments that I can think of in the last couple of years of my life took place while I was doing this writing. In the middle of the night, no one was around, no noises, all the silence, the beautiful silence, the connection, if you will, to God. And I would write every day, and I'd sit down and I'd say, I wonder what chapter 2 is going to be. And I would just get very quiet and I would listen. It would be just so crystal clear to me, and then that would come on, I would meditate on it. But I suggest that you can do this in any area of your life. When you get to a place of complete trust and surrender, where you can say, okay, I'm not alone here, and I'm going to allow this higher voice, this higher self, if you will, to work with me. I'm going to work with it instead of fighting it. And you sort of suspend the ego. And you almost get to a point where you watch yourself. I could see myself sitting there doing what I was doing. And if I would get thirsty, I'd notice that I was getting thirsty. When I was speaking in New Orleans about St. Francis and referring to the way that he would talk about his body, he referred to it always in the third person. It's tired. It's cold. It's hungry. But I'm not. Who I am is just noticing that. And the more I notice it and the more I allow it to be cold and to be hungry and to be tired, the closer I am to God. This is how he felt. So that his body was really sort of his test about how connected he could be to this higher place. And at the end of the talk, a woman came up to me from, this was a national convention for people who worked in the home care industry, who took care of, came into the homes of people where people were in comas or people were close to death or people had had injuries or had some kind of illnesses and so on, and they would take care of people in their homes. They're servants. And a woman came up to me and she said, I've been reading this book, and it's written by Nikos Kostantzakis. You know who that is, any of you? Nikos Kostantzakis? What did he write? Zorba. If you haven't read Zorba, I mean, Zorba comes alive in every... If you want to know what self-actualization is in the sense of just enjoying life, just read every page of Zorba the Greek, or the Greek Passion, or The Last Temptation of Christ. And he wrote a historical novel called St. Francis in 1962, which is now out of print. And I found very, very, very difficult to get a hold of. In fact, my friend at Hay House, Reed Tracy, got on the internet and said, Wayne, he said, I can get you one copy in hardcover for $125. The orphan in me immediately surfaced. And I said, $125? He said, we're going to get it for you. And they presented it to me as a gift. It's an original first edition of this novel called Saint Francis. And this woman was reading a paperback version of it that had the price on it. It was $1.95. So it tells you how old, okay. And she had bought it in a used bookstore for 99 cents. And the pages were all yellow. She said, this is the most glorious book that I have ever read. She said, I have never felt so much just happiness in reading a book. It just seems to come out of every page. The New York Times called Kostantzakis the greatest novelist of the 20th century. So he has some pretty fine credentials. She said, I'm two-thirds of the way through it. And I said, oh, I said, boy, I'm going to Assisi on October the 4th, which is the feast day of St. Francis, who's the patron saint of every animal and every person who's ever suffered, and was leaving on the 4th for Assisi and Lourdes in the south of France. And she said, I want you to have this book. And I said, well, you mean when you finish it? She said, no, I want you to have it now. I said, but it means so much to you. She said,